We've been blessed with a darling baby, and a cute little one is he. She took the baby in her arms and said, Benny is his name. He says, I've been gone away 3 years, darling, can't you please explain? So I won't be so dumb. Tell me, where did little Benny come from? And every time he'd ask, she'd say, Benny's from heaven. His face got red, but still she repeatedly said, Benny's from heaven. He says, I've asked the neighbors that come around, but no one can seem to remember Benny coming down. Now about, he said, about a little thing like this, I ordinarily shouldn't bother. He said, but mama, what little I know about children, I'm sure they gotta have fathers. And as I look at Benny, he said, I can't plainly see Benny must be from heaven, 'cause he darn sure ain't from me.
The great Eddie Jefferson and his unique way of delivering a song. First he'll change it, and then he'll put new meanings to everything. And Eddie Jefferson was a very famous performer at the Apollo Theater, but not just at the Apollo Theater. And I thought we needed a break today from all the sorrow and the calamity that we've gone through, and this was the best way to do it. This is from his 1977 album, The Main Man. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. This is where we gather to do a collective venting, whatever it is that you have had on your mind that you've not been able to express yet, and you would like to share that with us. This is the program to do it at 888-874-4888. Now, I want to just do a little cautionary note here. Don't waste this precious time. Please do have something important to say. Make a point. It is immaterial whether people agree or disagree with you. What we do want, however, is for the program to reflect what it says. It's you freeing your mind, you making a point about something, you have a strong opinion about something, and that is the point. It is your program. You determine where we go, and let's get started with Moki from Connecticut.
Greetings and salutations.
Thank you, and the same to you. Moki, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm getting better every day. How about you?
I'm hanging in and trying to get better every day.
I heard something.
So what are you freeing your mind of today? What's on your mind?
I'm going to try to touch on 2 points very quickly. Gary did a little pop quiz at the end of the show. I called in, but there wasn't time to get my answer in. But it got me thinking. And one topic is the untold wealth of the Rothschilds. Everyone talks about, everyone can rattle off 4 or 5 names of the richest people they know. Are you hearing me okay?
Yes.
I'm going to get a little closer. The people, for example, no one talks about the Rockefellers' wealth. How come? Now, I'm sure I can look it up, but it's not talked about in popular conversation. They've got to be way richer than the Bezos, the Gates, the Buffetts, the Soroses, etc. So I heard from 2 independent sources, but I think both on PRN, that the Rothschilds, and it's not pronounced Rothschild, it's two German words, Red Shield, Rothschild. We can get into that another time. they, by the way, funded Hitler's genocide. That's a claim I'm making. Look it up if you don't believe me. But I heard that from the first source that the Rothschild, I'll pronounce it conveniently so you know who I'm talking about, were worth 4.7 quadrillion. That's 1,000 trillion. So you take all the richest people you've ever heard of, put them in a little nutshell, and it's chump change. So no one talks about the Rockefeller. I said, I'm sorry, Rockefeller is a pronunciation I've heard. It's an alternate pronunciation.
But where are you going with this? What is the point? What is the point you're making?
To get people thinking about where the real wealth lies, because where the wealth lies the control of the entire planet. Where, who's got the most money? And who's really running things? That's why I made that comment about Hitler didn't have a dime. So the Rothschilds have been funding wars and supplying munitions, you know, weapons or weapon makers with money for every major war since the Middle Ages, possibly. So I just want people to think about, you know, who people are not talking about, who are really running things, because it all comes down to the money, just follow that money. The other thing is, I hope the listener from Berkeley is tuning in today, because
that's Harvey.
I've been pushing hydrogen, and nobody's getting it, Utrice. So I have to give you a quick example. A project started in Norway, took a community of single-family homes, and supplied them with their extra wind power, because they got a lot of extra wind there in Norway. They supply each household with a refrigerator-sized generator that splits water right there in the home, in the kitchen or the basement, supplying the entire household with decentralized energy. So take this example. Now, you can look up this project in Norway, hydrogen. It's hydrogen gas, I keep trying to tell people. So if you take one of these generators and scale it down and put it under the hood of a car, you have hydrogen gas created on demand with no pressure and no volatility. And go from there, it's zero emissions, it's close to 100% efficiency, because the gasoline and diesel that you're burning now, 70% of it is going out of your tailpipe. It's so inefficient. So I got to get people understanding that liquid hydrogen is a big process. It takes it away.
Okay, you got us started today. Thanks, Mokee, for calling in.
Okay.
And hopefully you'll have an opportunity to update what you're saying today. Ephraim Edgewater, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you are also.
I'm hanging in.
Okay, that's what we got to keep doing. I just came up with this. Well, I've not come up with something, but I thought maybe this could be a reason, since all week you've been talking about it locked and loaded and why we're so concerned with Saudi Arabia's oil refinery and stuff. It's just, it seems to me that it's more likely that the United States would blow up their refinery. I mean, we're supposedly number one in production of oil.
Yeah, but you can't make these allegations just wildly like that. To say, well,
why
I
not?
Think it's more likely that the U.S. did it. No, I mean, you can't say
I'm
things
trying,
like that.
Excuse me. I wasn't trying to say something that's, you know, doesn't make any sense or stuff. It would explain why we're so, you know, in a
but
hurry
you're making
to,
an accusation.
To come to their aid.
Or you're making an allegation. And when you make allegations that are not founded on fact, could you point to somewhere credible where there is backup for what you're saying now?
Well, it's like with smoke, you don't need to see the fire. You smell smoke.
No. But don't forget, you have to be responsible. When you say things and when you make an allegation, if you don't have some kind of facts, some point of reference that corroborates what you're saying, then you're engaging literally in propaganda.
Yes, but I'm just a guy on the phone talking.
No. You're not just a guy talking on the phone. Please understand, you are reaching lots and lots of people. You're planting seeds in their heads with what you say. And it is not a responsible thing to just blithely make a statement and leave it there as if what you just said is absolutely true. Now, we have to be responsible for what we say.
Okay, I could say it's a possibility. There could be some possibility to that. I didn't
You didn't say it was a possibility, and even if you said it was a possibility, you still have, because you intended to come across as authoritative information, as opposed to conjecture. And
but
this is a very serious matter. We can't be fast and loose with it.
But aren't they doing the same thing when they say that Iran is responsible?
500 million people do the same thing. I'm concerned that when you do it, you are not doing the same thing.
Okay. Well, how many times have we been lied to in the last 100 years?
All right, okay. You refuse to address the issue, which is made a statement and you presented it as fact. I'm saying what backs up your statement. And now you're telling me that, well, I'm not doing anything different from what somebody else is doing, but that's not the point. The point is that you're doing it, and because you're doing it, you should be holding yourself accountable, because there are people on this program who are listening to you and might take what you say as fact. Is that fair or not fair?
Well, it's totally preposterous what I'm saying. Who benefits? That's what I'm trying to find out. Who would benefit by Saudi Arabia's oil production being shut down? It would seem
and
to me.
To your mind, if you asked a question, that is enough. Who benefits? How about Roy Busby? So then, does that make it fact?
I didn't say it was a fact. I said it's a possibility.
All right, you're playing games. Games with me today.
No, I'm not. I'm not playing games.
You're playing games. Because the thing is, this is what we have to do. This is part of our work. We have to live by the integrity of our work. And when, you know, you just blithely throw something out and you expect it to get the respect of serious scholarship, or in any event, you expect to reach some number of people who would believe what you say, then you're engaging in the same kind of propaganda as the people that we're trying to expose.
But isn't it true all week you've been asking us and wondering to yourself why we're in such a hurry to take this upon ourselves, that we're like responsible to protect Saudi Arabia's oil field?
Okay,
so I'm just giving a possibility.
I'm glad you asked a question. Just yesterday in Congress, they asked exactly the same question that I asked. Just yesterday. And they want a thorough examination of the question and a straightforward answer. They asked a question. I said, well, look at this. They're listening to us. It must be. So it's not, and it was not a silly little by the way question. The issues I raised were very serious. And now they want to form some special committee to probe these questions. Why is the United States in front of Saudi Arabia on the bombing or the somehow the attack on its oil installations? And that was one of my first questions. Now they want an inquiry. Well, that's good. But it shows the merit of the question that I asked. It was not a silly question when I raised it, and it was not just for, you know, I put something in the ether. No, it's a very serious question. And they now want that very question to be at the epicenter of a new probe, because now they have questions, even more questions, about Trump's conduct, which made no sense. It made no sense, no logical sense. And that's why I raised it. So all I'm saying is, it is good that you're thinking. It is good that you're thinking. But as you present a thought, please back it up. Please give it some foundation so that it impresses people listening to you that, hey, I didn't think about that. Let me check this out again. This guy just raised a question I never thought about. You see, this is the responsibility you have. You have that responsibility to indicate that you have thought not only about the question, but you have a good set of answers that should be considered. Thanks for calling in. Maude from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings to the beloved family. One of my favorite days for you, mine. First of all, let me correct beloved brother Ed earlier on in the week. He was referencing the crises, not in Barbados, but in the Bahamas. And because he doesn't have a piece of the puzzle, he was referring people to Ron Daniels, which is like going to the fox to protect the chickens. There's going to be a public platform that will explain and maybe foreshadow someone whose name might be a shorthand for deceit, fraud, plagiarism, and betrayal. And if not today, at another time, I'll leave the number with the producer and Ed and anybody else who wants to reach out to me, especially around something I've referenced before called CIRC, Circle of Integrity, Inquiry, Response, and Concern, that we don't have as a community. That's why the matter has to go public. Now, for those who do want to help in the Bahamas and want to go to something that is of integrity, there is the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, which is NAGB.org.bs. They have, of course, are aware of the situation, and they have a donation and further information.
All right, let me say this. I strongly recommend that we refrain from referring people to organizations and how to donate. I strongly suggest we don't do that. Why? In every situation, and the more distressful, the worse it is, people take the opportunity, and I'm not suggesting that the organizations you're talking about are doing that, but it occurs so often as to become commonplace, and we shouldn't do that. We should not just blithely say, well, okay, I'm going to send money here, or I'm going to send money there. Ask yourself some questions before you do any of that. A lot of these organizations are not doing the work. They're not doing the work. They talk about doing the work, but they're not doing the work. And that's why you have to step back a little bit and resist the urge to just give and give, because this is where all kinds of bad things happen. The people never get the money that they're hoping for, the little bit of money that would help them, and then there is no plan. You could give $500 million right now, and it would be of no use if there is no plan. And there is no plan. There is a plan forming. People have different kinds of plans. But the plan I'm talking about is a plan that puts people, literally, they shouldn't be following our lead. We should be following their lead. And in many cases, when you get very close up and you ask to see their plans, nothing exists. Their bodies still floating in the ocean. There's still people that are unaccounted for. There are all kinds of things going on, and there is no cohesive plan. This is my main criticism, and especially as a Caribbean person. It is so disorganized, and it is so... It doesn't have an end game. Okay, so you're going to go look for bodies. That's admirable. That is not an end game. In the aftermath of this horrible storm that caused so much damage, and this is the latest of them, you would think that there is a coordinated effort on paper. What will we do in the event of A, B, C, D, and E? That is not the approach they take. The approach seems to be, well, we'll deal with it when we come to it. That's not a plan. And I would not myself. I can't see myself supporting yet another round of, well, we'll do the best we can. No, you have to have a plan. And it's about time. This region has gone through many decades of the same thing. And yet we still see lack of coordination. All of these Caribbean nations should have a plan. There should be a master plan of what you do in a disaster. But then the disaster comes and people are all over the place trying to react to the immediate situation, when they know in this region, this is likely to happen every year. You take a look at Haiti and the earthquake. People are acting as if an earthquake in Haiti was just the furthest thing from the mind. They've been having earthquakes for years. Haiti did not have a master plan. And that is why there are people who today have not had an improvement in their quality of life since the earthquake. What people like Bill Clinton had a plan. $10 million in one project alone, put in his pocket. Nobody knows where that money went. And since the earthquake, nobody cared to chase that question down. Where did the money go? How did the people benefit? What kind of help did they in fact get?
Mm-hmm. And the Red Cross built one house after they got millions. If I could just speak to some of the general topics of the week, and I definitely agree that you must research before you give, as to Saudi Arabia. First of all, we know Donald Trump is obsessed with money, which he really hasn't done well with, and generally in business. And they bailed him out after his six bankruptcies around casinos. And, of course, we know that with Qatar and, you know, the the back-breaking toward them and how they indirectly helped Kushner and his billion-dollar debt. So all of that is Donald Trump who he is in transactional. And basically a fool that's in the highest office of the land. But I also want to bring up this latest scandal around the whistleblower and how it seems is starting to come out. He had some conversation with one of the rulers or the whatever, the prime minister or president of the Ukraine, and he seems that he's trying to manipulate them, and the law is not being followed in terms of the whistleblower protocol in terms of his acting director of national intelligence and Barr, the DOJ chief, interfering with the law and what they're supposed to turn over to Congress. So I'd like to hear some discussion on that and your thoughts if you've been following that story.
I've been following it, but I don't understand it. I'm clear that the suspicion is that Donald Trump has been maintaining contact and separate business arrangements and legal arrangements with leaders all over the world. We're clear about that. How is it that, and you have an investigative arm, how is it that almost halfway through his term, they're just now coming up with these things? This is after knowing or having gotten all kinds of hints as to how Donald Trump does business. Is he likely, now that he has unfettered access almost to huge pots of money in the United States, mm-hmm. is it likely that he suddenly will find God and walk the straight and narrow? These investigations should have been ongoing because they knew about them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you see, we can't get away from the fact that the people who are supposed to be doing their jobs refuse to do their jobs. But you compare the treatment of Trump with how they treated Obama. Mm-hmm. They automatically assumed mm-hmm. that he was crooked.
Mm-hmm.
And he was watched like a hawk.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen here.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And just lastly, the Democrats, the clock seems to be running out on them, because when you hear that there's 2 weeks off in October, then Thanksgiving, and then the other holiday and everything, it's like, you know, do your job. You see somebody that's so corrupt and so abusing power. University of North Texas documented that everywhere he goes and has a rally, the hate crimes go up 226%. Al Green, which you brought out, his impeachment article immediately, shortly after he took office, was basically ignored. You know, the Democrats are so inept, it's almost unbelievable.
And then they want to try to persuade us that they're onto something now, and we ought to focus on, you know, keeping the office clean and pure. Get the heck out of here with that. You're not talking to me. You're not talking to me with that nonsense. So I was one of the topics I had scheduled, going back to the hurricane relief. I think it is a huge scandal how it is being handled. And I believe that lots of money will be raised and redirected to other things and other people, because it has happened time and again in the Caribbean. I mean, people are truly suffering. They're truly suffering. But we have, and this is the question, we do not have effective controls at the local level. We don't. So people get away with a lot at the expense of the you know, the misery that people have to live with. I watched the news the other day, and one woman was so distraught. She could see the body of her mother bobbing up and down in the water, still, after so many days.
Wow.
Yeah. That is abominable. And I don't see why in the Caribbean there isn't a coordinated effort to deal strictly with these kinds of disasters insofar as they are so common. They are so
reminiscent of Katrina. You remember how, you know, bodies were just in the streets for days?
Bodies in the street and unclaimed and rotting and so forth. This is an abomination, and it goes beyond insulting. There is no reason, given the capabilities that are there today, that people have to suffer like this. But then again, when these decisions are in the hands of a very few people, and they smell money coming in, you'd be surprised at how they make it disappear, and nothing gets done. Nothing gets done. Behind the storm should be a series of indictments and people going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people truly are suffering. They're not pretending. They are suffering. The money will be flowing if it hasn't already begun to flow. But the calculation is that people in power intend for that money to be theirs. They're not sharing. This is not an act of charity where they are concerned. They have no concern about charity.
Mm-hmm.
This is an opportunity to become very wealthy at the expense of the suffering of people. And that's why the hard choice is we can't feed into that. We know it's going on, but we also know to some degree, you know, some basics are still flowing through, but not the kind of help they would need. Is you have to rebuild houses, you have to rebuild roads, You have to rebuild schools and hospitals. That is serious money. Where is it coming from, and who is it going to? We have no citizen committees formed to monitor these questions. We have no international legal entity that is following the money. All we have is every day you see reports of how people are suffering, and they are. So this is the dilemma. This is why we have to form our own organizations. Even if we can't do or achieve as much as major organizations, we have to have control. We have to have control of the resources.
And organizations of integrity, that's so key, you know.
Well, it takes a while for that to happen because you have to have a track record, and many of them don't because they're just starting up. They have no track record to refer to. But I'm hopeful that people would see the logic of beginning regional watchdog groups that keep track of these things, because there's a lot of money. A lot of money coming in and disappearing into hands that don't, that have no claim, really. And the people in the meantime are held up as shields. You see how they're suffering? They're suffering. And we're here to help. No, you're not. You're there to get your own share. So that's the dilemma that we face all over the world. It's the same thing. Unless things are controlled locally by groups who form watchdog groups to monitor how things are being done. And right now is a good time, believe it or not, to begin to redesign all the faulty things. Like one of the problems in Haiti was that the homes were the best that the people could build, but they were not well designed. They were not of good quality because they can't afford to buy good quality cement and good quality bricks and so forth. So you have to find a way to rebuild, but with a smart approach. You replace what was there, which no longer is, but you find a way, working in concert, you find a way to see which would be the best design, which would be the best materials, and so forth. And then you procure that. You'll need the people who specialize in specific kinds of design. It's not, you can't build a regular house in a place prone to hurricanes. When 185-mile-an-hour winds are coming at your house, you'll soon learn that your house, you can't withstand it. So you have to keep these things in mind. It seems to me that this is a great opportunity, a great time, despite all the tragedy, for people to take an entirely different approach to these questions. Maybe when it started, you had children in school. Could the school resist this kind of winds? Do you have alternative plans for where they can go? Are you building shelters, just like in the United States? During the war years, you had shelters, and people could quickly run to one and feel a little bit safer than staying in their house. So these are the kinds of approaches that have to be taken in the construction of homes and buildings and infrastructure. How do you rebuild so that you stand a chance? You stand a chance against Mother Nature. Thanks, Ma'at, for calling in today.
Thank you.
David, from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. I want to get right to the point. This discussion you've been having, I could weigh in on that, but I'm going to leave that alone right now. What's on my mind, I want to free my mind on another subject, and it is the Social Security system. The Social Security system, as I see it, is a system that could be turned into a pension system for all people working in the country. I think it should be improved. I don't hear anybody talking about improving upon the Social Security system. Most of the discussion I've heard is that, oh no, it's failing, it's gonna be out of money and all that. But we need to be focusing on improving it, making it so that more revenue comes into it by not having a cutoff amount for income, for including all types of income, not just salary and wages that people make, and with no top amount that is cut off at a really small amount. No matter what the income comes from, it should be a Social Security tax upon it. I think that Social Security should be designed so that people should get Social Security at least 60 years of age, full Social Security, and it should be essentially a pension system, and much more than people are getting now, which is in many cases for many people, their sole income after they reach that retirement age or disabled that we have in effect right now. So I think that should be one of the big discussions in these so-called quote-unquote debates, the Social Security system and how to protect the people that live here. Many people become elderly and are impoverished. Many people are disabled when they're elderly and wind up thoroughly impoverished. So Social Security system should be a big topic of discussion. Now, there are many ways of improving it. So we need to discuss those things rather than having a system that essentially has not changed in a long time. So that's one item of importance that I think that people should be discussing. The other thing is that we got to do something about scaring people so much that most people stand by and let the government spend over $1 trillion a year on so-called defense spending, which is really war spending, and intelligence spending, which is for spy centers and the secret police, I call them. We need to do something about that. That's a total waste of money, having any kind of budget that requires you to buy all these military devices and contracts to pay people and excessive amounts of bases all over the world and the personnel that go along with it. So that's a big area that we ought to be dealing with. And, you know, I think it's important, and that should be up in the forefront of those people that are running for that faux election, Democratic election of the one party to take the presidency and the people who sit in the corrupt Congress. So, you know, those are the two items that I think are essentially important for people to think about, and no one's talking about it. And that's what's on my mind for today.
Well, all right. I think you've made your point. I agree wholeheartedly with the points that you've made today, especially as it relates to Social Security. We have not just seniors, but people who are disabled and are depending on this as a source of income. It's not been at the top of discussions, except, you know, to start threatening people about, as Trump has, about cutting Social Security. I don't understand how that could pass as a rational approach. And we need to get people more mobilized and more animated about these things. Thank you, David, for calling in and contributing today. Ernie from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Ernie, are you there? Okay. Lee,
yeah,
from
I'm
New
here.
York.
Hi.
Oh, Ernie, is that you?
No.
Ernie?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Yeah. Oh, regarding the, I wanted to bring up the topic you was just discussing about the Bahamas.
Yes.
My concerns is that this could happen again. And psychologically, a lot of the Bahamians will be concerned about that too, that can this happen again? Sure, it can. I mean, they got 800, 700 islands, and some of them are tiny, and with very, you know, the elevation from the sea is very small. What I was thinking, suggesting one day, the day after, 2 days after the storm hit, is I sat down in my kitchen table and I said, what can they do in the future? And what they actually have to do is they should build what is called hurricane bunkers, not shelters. They can build hurricane bunkers in different locations where the population, depending on the amount of population in certain areas, where the people can at least have some place to go so they don't drown. And they will have food in there. They can put generators on the top of these bunkers. And these hurricane bunkers should be able to withstand 250 miles an hour wind and be high enough to, to prevent, even if it floods, it will be higher up, and it should prevent water from coming in from the bottom. There should be some sort of way of sealing the door so water won't be able to get in, and the windows will be on the top. If they should do something like this, they ought to do something like this. I mean, you got people living in far places that Nassau is the central, and Nassau is so far from a lot of places where people are living. People in the Bahamas have to travel by plane like we travel by car, or
yeah,
a plane or boat. And so the other thing I didn't like about, because I've been following the news, but I do follow these news sometimes, especially if the Caribbean gets hit by a storm, like Puerto Rico, et cetera, is that I was watching who was getting the check. And what happens when they get a check, like they got, I think, 20 million from India, so many millions from China, and right away China gave in $100,000. Other islands are giving in money. When it comes to a check and a large amount, the prime minister is the one that takes it, and they have a picture of him taking the check. That doesn't look good. I think they should somehow have a committee receiving the check and what the check, should be used for. That's my point about this, the issue in the Bahamas. I've been there several times. I know the people of Bahamas, beautiful country, and the weather's nice, but they're at risk. And it's kind of scary. So hopefully this, like you said, will would channel the resources that they get channeled towards the right direction and building homes that can withstand storms. And if they have people like Haitians living in certain communities, like the one in, I forgot the name of it, Pigeon and Mud or something like that.
The Mud.
There's a community. The Mud. Yeah, the Mud, where the Haitians were living. A lot of them die because their homes are just smashed by nothing. It was like papers. They should have a bunker, again, not a shelter, but a hurricane bunker where they can go there. And then when the storm passes, they try to rebuild their own community again.
What they should have is a lot of brainstorming. You bring in experts from all over the world that experience really dangerous weather and who have answers. They have answers as to how to lessen the impact and what it would take. But we haven't seen in all these years of this region having storms, really terrible storms, we haven't seen an effort to gather people who know or who have a very good idea of what could be done and bring them together to come up with, let's say, a design. Just like in the United States, you had during the war, there was a great concern about the strength of a house. What it could withstand in terms of a drop bomb or an attack or something. These are the kinds of ideas that should inform redesign in that area, because it's not a matter of whether it would happen or if it would happen again. It is going to happen again and again.
Exactly.
It's going to happen. So why not begin now a serious effort to call all these designers and construction experts from all over the world? And, they meet for months at a time, and they come up with some ideas, and they test them. This is what is supposed to happen now. What is the design to be of a well-built house in that area? What would it look like? What would it take? We can't just say, well, you know, we have to think in terms of after it has happened, what do we do? No. So I take your point very, very well.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
And it makes sense. It makes sense, you see. And the business of the prime minister receiving the check.
Yes, that definitely was in there.
I understand exactly what you're talking about. So you do have to think better. Even if you adopt a project where just three new houses are built, three new prototypes are presented as ways to lessen the impact of a terrible storm. That's progress.
Exactly. Agree.
Thanks so much for calling in and contributing. Lee from New York. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello, Lee.
Hi. I have a question. Is the government the only entity that's allowed to borrow the people's money and never pay it back?
No.
Sums that have been borrowed from Social Security. How is it that you don't pay that back, but you find money to make huge tax cuts? Social Security and the post office have been pillaged. When will that money be returned to them? Social Security is nowhere near broke. Give it back what you borrowed.
With interest. But also, it's continuing because we don't have a strenuous enough objection. People are not in the streets. You know how these things work. This is the pattern in the United States. Nothing happens until people start getting very agitated and put themselves out in the street and say, this is not going to happen. We're not going to allow it. And literally, they have to shame government into doing the right thing. We have to think of ways in which we constantly shame the government into doing the right thing. Okay. We have to leave it there for today. That's the end of the program. I am so grateful to have listeners who understand that we try to just build a community here, a community of shared thought, and hopefully the kind of thought that inspires action. Because in the end, our future is on depends on the strength of our communities. And we have had enough of letting our communities down and letting them go. And we see that we suffer so badly because of that. We have to change that mindset and get into protecting our communities, rebuilding them, reclaiming them, and championing them, and of course the people in them. Thanks so much for calling in today, and you over the weekend attract good energy to yourself, and we'll see you on Monday. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
His face got red, but still she repeatedly said, Benny's from heaven. He says, I've asked the neighbors that come around, but no.